And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, behind a lot of the stuff that went on politically this week and is going to go on next week, much of which is centered in the House delegation, the Republican Party's House delegation. But behind it is the stench of authoritarianism. And in the last week, the guy who got the most publicity for his authoritarian proclivities was Elon Musk. When in the name of freedom, his freedom, not yours, in the name of free speech, in the name of free debate, he chucked people off Twitter because he didn't agree with them. Got rid of the committee in the company that was responsible for making sure that people weren't defamed and disinformation wasn't spread. And in general, behaved like you expect an authoritarian to behave. This was a guy who, you know, made himself a reputation speaking on behalf of freedom, that people thought of in a progressive way because he was promoting electric cars and therefore combating climate change. He was just like this guy, Sam Fried, who promoted cryptocurrencies and was a big donor to the Democratic Party, and who was secretly caught saying, of course I'll donate to the Democratic Party. That'll make my reputation. Jeff Bezos, who does what he wants to do, defines freedom in terms of what benefits him and expects everyone to go along with thinking that the freedom of the rich, the freedom of the corporations, is freedom. And anything else is not freedom. Not recognizing that workers really should have the freedom to have a good job, a decent job with decent pay. That's their right. After all, if the corporation has a right to do what it wants to do because it owns the and sells the product, the worker sells his labor, his ability to work. Why doesn't the worker have a right to the freedom of getting the best deal that he can get, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's this is an ongoing thing. Sort of like unchained capitalism in some respects. It's a lot of personal ego in others. These folks, and I mean, there's others of them. I mean, Bezos isn't the worst example. You get into the Peter Thiels of the world, Martin Shkreli's, those kind of guys. And it's tied up to a certain extent in politics. Donald Trump, of course, is an example of this, who think that they're all powerful, all-knowing.
Well, the business world gives you that feeling. I mean, because it's based on the fact that whoever owns is the boss. If you own the company, you're the boss. Nobody can contradict you. It's your company. Authoritarianism is built into the management ethos of capitalism. It's just the way it is. So,
well, it's the structure.
It is the structure. That's correct.
You know, it's a non-democratic structure,
right?
That we have. You know, they say, well, you have an elected board of directors, but you know, nobody. You know, Jake Rosen can't say I'm going to run for the board of directors of Amazon.
That's right.
You know, I mean, technically, you can put up a dissident or a dissident slate, but it takes someone with a lot of money. And a lot of skill, and you know, the odds are stacked against you because of the way that the shares are held. But these folks, you know, they often sow the seeds of their own destruction. And Musk, of course, is right now a prime example of that. He, number one, got on Twitter and made a commitment to overpay for Twitter by a lot. The board couldn't wait to kind of sell it to him at that price. You know, they were something that was worth maybe somewhere between $25 and $30 a share, and here's a guy who's going to pay of $54 a share. The thing is, while he's doing all of this stuff that's kind of distracting him, his Tesla stock, which is the foundation of his wealth, has been tanking. It's down, I think, 50 or 60% for the year. Has lost an awful lot of money for a lot of people who are investors in that, but primarily himself. In order to keep Twitter afloat, he's got to sell shares of Tesla, which drives the price down. So it, and there's this partnership that then forms primarily with the Republican Party to protect these folks, to protect this kind of unregulated activities. Steve Bannon, his theme is to deconstruct the administrative state. Well, what does he mean by that? What's he want to do? Well, that means he takes away all of the safeguards that people need for good products or for other means of safety.
Yeah, what he's talking about is getting rid of the Consumer Protection Agency, getting rid of the SEC, getting rid of the Federal Trade Commission, getting rid of everything that makes sure that the people who own the corporations can't do whatever they like and defraud the public in order to make a profit. That's how these agencies came into existence. The Food and Drug Administration came into existence because bread had sawdust baked into it by the big bakeries. And all down the line, every one of these agencies was created to prevent the owners of the corporations from just riding roughshod in the, just getting whatever profit they could get and selling whatever they could get away with selling or not selling.
Yeah. And there was also another aspect to this. And I'm reminded of the president of the, it was the Pennsylvania Coal Company or one of the, or the railroad or the bank that owned all of this stuff during the miners' strike, the anthracite strike in 1902, 1903, who really believed that it was a God-given right for these people to run the companies and that everybody else was just merely a serf. To be exploited for this stuff. And but again, now we're seeing where the balance has shifted to a certain extent for a variety of reasons. We know about the FDA because when you get stuff like Martin Shkreli with the prices that he raises on things. With other stuff that's coming out, the unionization. We have Starbucks, which was, you had a figurehead leader who was Howard Schultz, who thought that whatever he said would go, and that his workers would buy into it. And now they're unionizing and they're on strike. Amazon, they have these warehouses where. It's reported that people in the summertime, they don't have air conditioning, that they're getting sick, that they're, getting hurt. And there's unionization going on there. That's why the mines in northeastern Pennsylvania unionized, because too many people were dying and getting hurt in the jobs. And they weren't making a decent enough living to survive.
Yeah. Well, the point is that the spirit of authoritarianism, which is born in the corporation's structure, migrates to the political system.
Right.
And with regard to the Republican Party, we have a civil war in the Republican Party between the old line authoritarians and the new populist neo-fascist authoritarians. And it's an interesting struggle between these two groups. And the point of it at the moment is the struggle whether Kevin McCarthy will become the Speaker of the House or he won't become the Speaker of the House, or it'll take a long time for him to become the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, it's in my way of thinking, it's no better than a 50-50 proposition. And there are five people, five members. He needs to lose no more than four votes in his caucus.
Right, he needs 218 votes.
And he's got
222 members.
Right. And so he can't lose more than five. And right now there are five that are holding.
He can't lose more than four.
More than four, right.
Yeah.
And we don't know behind those five whether there are others that are prepared to do the same.
But what do they have against McCarthy? They have against him that he's not reactionary enough, right?
Yeah. He's crazy enough for what he wants to push, but it's not, you know, you've got that real fringe group there. Marjorie Taylor Greene is with him.
She's with him, right.
She's with him.
And Trump is with him, too. Trump is supporting him.
Yes, he's making calls on his behalf.
Yeah.
We understand. But
the Freedom Caucus is not with him.
Well, yeah. Andy Biggs and Matt Gaetz.
Right.
And,
Gosar, Max, Paul Gosar.
Gosar, right. Yeah. It's going to be what's going to be. If they can't agree on a speaker, there's going to be nothing doing in the House of Representatives come January. Now, as you say, why that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Because what does he want to do? Look at what McCarthy wants to do.
Yeah, investigate Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
They ran on this thing immigration, that the border is in bad shape, and it is in bad shape right now, let's face it. And inflation, although inflation seems to be coming down. But they have no cures for this stuff. So all they do is throw out red meat. The cure for everything is investigate Hunter Biden.
That's right.
It's sort of like Hillary's emails.
Right.
You know, that's the cure for everything. And as long as they can get people to buy into that, they're going to ride that wave.
And don't forget, they do want to get rid of Social Security. They do want to get rid of Medicare. They do want to get rid of Medicaid. They're anxious to get rid of those things.
The Republican Party's been wanting to do that since they first started in the 1930s.
That's right. And McCarthy is particularly annoyed right now because the Republicans in the Senate have agreed to negotiate with the Democrats to come out with a spending plan that will go through October of 2023. That would prevent McCarthy from having any say in January over the budget. And he figured that in January he would be able to hold Medicare hostage, Medicaid hostage, and especially paying the bills that were incurred last year hostage by refusing to increase the debt limit. If the budget is passed, all of that is going to be funded. He's very unhappy about that. His group is very, these are already the good guys. These aren't the crazy guys. Can you imagine this?
Well, we're going to see. This is the chaos coalition, I guess, is what we call it. And, the one thing that happens is then people get disgusted with government and they blame both parties no matter what.
That's right. That's right. But that's part of Bannon's theory, right? Isn't that that part of the strategy? If people get disgusted with government, then people will like it when they dismantle all of the agencies of government that help people. It's like those people in the Tea Party meetings, get the government's hands off my Medicaid.
Right. And then it'll be too late.
Yeah.
It'll be too late, and they'll wonder, and they'll say, what have we done? But they won't take they won't take responsibility for what they've done to themselves.
That's right. You know, COVID is a good example about this. You look at the five or six or seven states that had the most deaths, the most cases per capita, the worst rates of all in the United States. You know, in the United States, as of this weekend, we've had 100 million cases of COVID in the last couple of years. And we've had 1,100,000 people who died. And the greatest rates of death were in states ruled by Republicans and dominated by anti-vaxxers. That's just the fact.
Right. And even In other states, when you looked at things, Democratic counties had a lower death rate than Republican counties.
That's right. That's right. And anti-vaxxerism, except for Bob Kennedy Jr., is the staple, one of the staples of the Republican Party politics. For some reason, they went to war with vaccines.
Yeah, they started equating it with this libertarian idea of freedom, with masks and what have you. And it just took hold to the whole extreme. I mean, we had Ron DeSantis this week coming out, holding some sort of a conference with his so-called medical experts, his chief medical officer down in Florida that he appointed, who is a skeptic and whatever, saying that he's going to appoint a grand jury to look into the National Institute of Health, the CDC, FDA.
It's all preposterous. What grand jury? What are they going to look at? What jurisdiction do they have?
That's part of the technique, though. They always go for the headline, and the follow-through doesn't matter so much to them.
Right.
It's the headline. It's what Trump did with Ukraine. Remember when he said, I need a favor, and I don't care whether you investigate Hunter Biden. Just say you're going to investigate Hunter Biden.
Right.
When he went to the Department of Justice, and he wanted Jeffrey Rosen to write a letter. He got Jeffrey Clark to draft a letter,
right,
saying, you know, there were irregularities in the election. But he said, just write the letter. We'll take care of the rest. This is what they do. You know, in any newspaper article, the headline is the most important part of it. And the first paragraph is the second most important part. And, you know, you can't get down to the details. Most people don't stick with that.
Right.
By the way, in terms of details this week, there was a study came out, as long as we're talking of vaccines, that vaccines saved approximately 3.2 million lives in America. That's half a Holocaust.
3.2 million lives, right.
Lives. They saved 18 million hospitalizations. They saved over $1 trillion, somewhere around $1.2 trillion to the economy. And you have a Republican Party that, you know, finds this appalling.
I know. And they don't think that it matters that 1,100,000 Americans died. You know, the Civil War, which is regarded as the greatest bloodletting we were ever involved in, only 500,000 died. Now, recent studies say it may have been as many as 700,000, but that's not a million. This is twice as much.
Yeah.
Twice as much.
It's unrelenting. And it's part of, my four rules on political action. And rule number four is always play offense. And that's what they keep doing. They keep coming up with the absurdities faster than anybody can deal with the absurdities.
I know.
And formulate the absurdities. And it goes from state to state and bad ideas after bad ideas. Social media is a vehicle for them. That's why the Musk situation is so important for them right now. Trump's social media, Truth Social, is really not doing anything.
No.
But it's still Twitter, although Twitter's losing a lot of its audience. They're going to go up into, Facebook or other means. Mastodon, I guess, is one of them. We'll have to see.
We talked about the horrible toll that COVID took on people. And what vaccines did to try to mitigate this, because of the lack of vaccination, because of the complete sabotage by the Republican administration, by the Trump administration, of the public health system, according to the studies by the important economists, including Larry Summers, who issued a report after a big study on this, and he's a conservative guy in economics, they estimate that COVID cost the American economy between $16 and $22 trillion. Just to know what that means, the total gross domestic product of in a year of the United States is $22 trillion. It's like a whole year wiped out of production, goods and services. And why? Because the Trump administration was unable, unwilling to do anything except politicize vaccines. And because of Bannon's theories, where you have to wipe out the administrative state, wipe out the public health sector. That's some cost, 1,100,000 dead, a whole year of gross domestic product wiped out. And these people, yeah. These people are, really criminals.
But, we got to investigate Hunter Biden. And I'll come up with these other crazy stuff, like, inject yourself with bleach or,
sterilize the Clorox and then drink it, right?
That we really don't need vaccines. We have natural immunities. All this stuff.
There's no reason to take anything they say seriously, and even to discuss it. What's interesting is what they're going to do to what these Republicans in the House are going to do to each other in the next month, which I think is going to be amusing to watch.
We talk about this fight within the Republican Party. They first have to pick a chairman for the Republican National Committee.
Oh, they're fighting about that too.
You know, it's really interesting. Michael Steele, who was the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, mm-hmm. Who they picked, for the wrong reason. I think because Barack Obama was president, they wanted to have a black face mm-hmm. to offset that. Mm-hmm. But like he always says, Trump won under him. The Congress became very, they won a lot of seats in the House. The Senate flipped, all of those things. And they got rid of him.
And he raised a lot of money. So naturally they got rid of him.
Sure. Now they have Ronna Romney McDaniel, who drops the Romney out of her name whenever she can now. Mm-hmm. And, they lost the midterms with Trump. They lost the 2020 election with Trump. They lost in 2022, and they want to reelect her.
Right.
There's some opposition, but it's not going to be strong enough. She has. This is what they do.
But the people who are running against her are all to her right.
Yeah.
I mean, Lindell is the pillow guy.
After Mitt Romney lost, remember they did that autopsy and they said, look, you've got to expand your base. You got to be more friendly to women. You got to be more friendly to minorities. And they said, that's a great idea. Thank you very much. And forget all that. We're going to double down. And they're going to have another autopsy, as we've discussed in the past. And it's with the same people who, was it Finchin is going to be one of them? The guy in Arizona?
Carrie Lake. Not yeah. Like Blake. Blake Edwards, the guy who ran for the Senate.
Oh, yeah, Blake Masters. Yeah, Blake Masters. And they're going to double down again because that's all they know how to do. Meanwhile...
Listen, they have a simple program. Racism, anti-immigrantism, and tax cuts for the corporations and the rich. That's their program. The racism is there to cover up pernicious effects of the tax cuts for the corporations and the rich. But the racism gives color and tone to the whole enterprise and weds them strongly to all the other fascist parties in the world.
I always quote Margaret Chase Smith there, who gave that speech, and she said she didn't want her party to turn into. I call it the FIBS thing, fear, intolerance, bigotry, and smear.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, that's where they're at. That's where they're at.
That's who they are. That is who they are. And McCarthy is going to turn into their mouthpiece if he gets elected, because he can't get elected without them.
Right. You know, in Pennsylvania, it's interesting. They don't want to give up. They lost the House. Right. There were 102 Democrats elected in the House to 101 Republicans. It's a big shift over the last two cycles.
Right.
But
it's a shift that you said couldn't happen. I believed you.
Yeah. They didn't think it could happen. They didn't think it could happen for you know, at least two cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
It occurred. But unfortunately for the Democrats, one of those elected had was deceased, and they have to have a replacement election. And along two of the other people who are elected are going to go to other offices. Summer Lee is becoming a congresswoman, and Davis is becoming the
lieutenant governor. Right.
And the issue is the Democrats swore in their leader as the head of the House, and the Republicans said, no, not so fast, you don't have the votes. And then the Republicans swore in their leader, Brian Cutler, and the Democrats said, you don't have the votes, you know, and now it's in the hands of the court. But the Republicans want to delay the interim election, which the Democrats want set for February 7th. They want to delay it until May, to the May primary.
And the reason is?
They don't want the Democrats to be able to do anything in the House.
Fair.
Under their control.
Right. Seems reasonable.
So, well, yeah. I mean, unwillingness to really acknowledge the will of the voters.
And by the way, these seats that are coming up, the Republicans haven't the chance of winning these seats. These are bedrock Democratic Party seats, right?
Pretty much. They're going to make a run, they think, at the Summer Lee seat. They wanted to have Kerry Del Rosso, who was the Republican lieutenant governor nominee under Mastriano, run there again. She's become a darling because she defeated in the state house a couple cycles ago the Democratic leader.
But it was a different district.
It was it was somewhat different. It was somewhat different. So we're watching that, and again, what it does is it builds people's distrust in government, which always works to the benefit of the Republicans.
I'll tell you something else that happened that'll feed people's distrust. The other day, a couple of weeks ago, Shapiro got a wonderful settlement for the people in Dimmick, whose water was poisoned by the gas industry. And the gas industry agreed to a big settlement, and they agreed to plead guilty and so forth and so on, signed off on it. 2 weeks later, the government lifted the ban on drilling in Dimmick, and the gas companies were able, which had been there for 4 years, and the gas companies have moved right in. They sink one well, it'll pay for the entire settlement that they agreed to. And they're going to sink more than one well in Dimmick. If that doesn't give people a bad odor in their nose, they're not smelling.
Right. And if there was a side deal made for that, that's going to come out.
Yep, it sure will.
And if Shapiro's involved in it, that's going to start him off on a very bad
foot. Well, that's it for this week.
Yes.
And we'll see what the Republicans are going to do next week. And next week, it could be that the Senate House is going to make a referral to indict Donald Trump. They're meeting on Monday or Tuesday about that?
Monday, I believe.
Monday.
And,
all right.
Yeah, maybe that'll be a Hanukkah present.
Yep. Anyway, happy latkes.
Happy latkes, yes.
Yeah. See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.